You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if you're in the Atlanta area, it won't be, because it's supposed to be raining like you wouldn't believe. That's what they say. But we'll see. 100% chance. But hey, if it has to get done, it must get done. Damn it, we got to do it. And we always got to do it safely in this time of COVID. Always keep your hands clean, keep your distance, and keep that damn mask on. Not, you know, some people mask be on their chin and below their lip. I mean, you know, you breathe in and out through your nose. Come on, y'all. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But, of course, if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. When you click on that, the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. I'm going to get with my brother Kwaku and going to update these programs. He's always been on it. In fact, if you go there, it's really cool. You know, I don't have a lot of synopsis on each program, but I got a picture there and the title is, and go for it. It's worth a listen. Why not? Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times I'm going to give are Eastern times. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming with Brother Jahad Ahmed out of Philadelphia. And that's followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then following that is from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. No program now on Thursdays, and we'll try to see if we can make something happen. So Brother Elliot and Brother, I'm here on Time for an Awakening, we'll have a program every day at least. If it's Friday, today's Friday, oh, okay, then when it's Friday, then at 8 p.m. on Friday, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Friday. Saturday, from 4 to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses as WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the African. Africa for the Africans with Bamani Taiembe. Really enjoyed him being on the program this past Wednesday, along with Brother Sincere. Now I'll mention the program that they're having tomorrow night with Brother Sincere. and with Brother Bomani, Africa for the Africans, doing an outstanding job, man. Please go to his site, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, and you have an opportunity to take a trip of a lifetime, because everything you need to know, the documents you need, the information you may need, is there on the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. The next upcoming trip, May 24th, next month, May 24th to June 5th, going to Ghana. Then he's off for a minute, and then the next trip will be November 18th through the 29th. I'm still going to go on this trip to Tanzania. And then December 24th to January 5th, 2022, to Ghana. And then to Senegal and Gambia, April 1st through the 11th of 2022. All these trips are $3,700. Please go online, look at the pictures to let you know what you are in store for. Places that he goes, the kind of hotels you're going to stay in, and everything like that. All right. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to give Brother Bomani a call, please call him at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. You want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Baba Brinoco Rashidi, he has his program next week, Friday and Saturday, April 30th and May 1st. The African Presence in Early Europe. It is an Eventbrite program. It's $25 for both sessions. Truly well worth it. You know he's going to have a wealth of information, a wealth of beautiful pictures documenting, because that's what he does. He is a primary researcher. Also, too, he has a tour July 18th through August 3rd, the educational tour to Ghana with Professor James Small and Dr. Leonard Jeffries. And then he'll be in Kemet July 31st to August 13th. He'll be in Kemet, a Kemetic tour. And so go to his website, drrinoco.com. drrinoco.com. Or give him a call, and I'm quite sure if you give him a call, you can direct you to his email address. Any way you can, get to drrinoco.com. 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Dr. Rinoco Rashidi. Habeshah, HabeshahIncorporated.org. They got some nice pictures up now. When you go to HabeshahIncorporated.org of their children, the programs, the Kashi Project, the buildings in Ghana that are up. Of course, Habeshah is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Habeshah, Incorporated.org. With Habeshah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and Urban Green Jobs. Check out Habeshah, Incorporated. The Ledge Group. The Ledge Group. Ledge stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Ledge Group. Check them out. Go to theledgegroup.com. There's a raffle that you can enter, and you could be a part on of a safari, an African safari in Tanzania. Okay? That's right. This thing is worth $15,000. That's right. A seven-day African adventure in Ashura, Tanzania. Of course, the Ledge Group deals with the four areas of human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 different projects in six countries, over 172 employed, and over 260 members. They need more members like you, brothers and sisters. Go to theledgegroup.com. Bibi Atumi, ABIBITUMI.com, BibiAtumi.com. Brothers and sisters, that is the only place you need to go for the shop, information, feedback, sources, all kinds of good things. They have other avenues to Bibi Atumi TV, Bibi Atumi. I'm telling you, it's on. So go to Bibi Atumi and become a member. sign up. Their Saturday seminar series tomorrow, Saturday tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern from 1 to 3, Building Strong Immunity the Natural Way with Sister Dr. Sherita. Dr. Sherita, tomorrow. In these uncertain times, we all have a focus. We all have to focus on our spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical health. Strengthening these aspects of life will create better protection against diseases. Join Dr. Sherita as she helps to guide our journey to a strong immune system. That's tomorrow, brothers and sisters, on bibiatumi.com. That's right, bibiatumi.com. Wadadas, healthy marketing juice bar located in here in the West End, here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy. Delicious smoothies and health drinks and pastries and so forth. Outstanding. And on weekends, Saturday and Sunday, they have a vegan caterer come in with food I'm quite sure that you'll enjoy. Across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is open on Friday and Saturdays only, I believe, from 1 to 7. From 1 to 7. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore, Sister Mama Nia, she has a bigger place, more opportunities to do a number of things. Right there in the main quarter of the Greenbrier Mall. She has books, postcards, greeting cards, figurines, T-shirts, all kind of good stuff for you at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give her a call, Mama Nia, 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Gazimde Ajamu, they have a delicious coffee bar now with delicious Cameroon Boyo, I'm telling you, and other teas and bean pies, as well as the books and T-shirts and all the other stuff that's happening at the Black Dot. I commented on him that he's used that space wisely. I mean, it looks really nice. That's the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Because you know why? There is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. If you want to call to listen, you can do so. But if you want to, you know, give us a comment or a question or you have a concern, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road, Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. For more information, contact my dear sister Shelly Amonset at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess, a one-stop natural shop. Sanjay-Haiti. Sister Gabby is doing an outstanding job in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, in up there in the hills with our children. The program is outstanding. Please go to the website and check it out for yourself. Sanjay-Haiti. Sonje-Haiti. AYITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Akaban Institute, another person, another compliments that are doing outstanding work, of course, is Baba Baruti and his lovely wife, Yah. They are really kicking butt with Akaban Institute. That's right, brothers and sisters. Make your check or money order out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786. Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But of course, if you want to use PayPal and Cash App, $Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, to make your contributions. He's a prolific writer. I'm going to read the Inye Sasim in a minute. And of course, you can have that book or all the other books that he has written at AkabinHouse.com. AkabinHouse.com. Also, too, tomorrow, the Common Sense. That's right, Common Sense Security. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m., from 9 a.m. to 12. Donations $10 or $20 a family. If you want to use PayPal, go to Yah, B-A-R, excuse me, go to PayPal, Yah, Y-A-A-B-A-R-U-T-I, Yah Baruti at yahoo.com for PayPal. You want to use Cash App, go $ Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, Baruti, B-R-U-T-I. Common Sense Security, you want to put that information in, put your name in, your email address where they can send you the link for tomorrow's Common Sense Security. They also have upcoming the Men's Quarterly next month, Warriorhood, Healing, and Ma'at. That's going to be Saturday, May 8th. Saturday, May 8th from 12 to 2. Saturday, May 8th. And then the 7th Annual Complementarity Conference, June 5th, 2021, Affirming African Love. Affirming African Love. The Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sasim. April 22nd. There's no way to think clear when your body is sick. Whatever you feed your body, you feed your brain. A sick body cannot defend freedom. A sick body cannot define freedom. Dr. Layla Africa. It is interesting and even at times comical how vanquished people, defeated, broken individuals who feel that their defeat and brokenness is deserved, come up with and thoroughly research and practice in ad infinitum any and everything. Excuse me. They think you use everything, religion, crystals, astral projections, drugs, alcohol, food, forgiveness, the sexual confusion, interracialism, humanism, intellectualizations, music, dance, sports, video games, sex, holistic health, yoga, whatever, to avoid seeing their distraction, except a practical means to permanently to remove our enemy. That's what should be happening, the practical means and ways to remove our enemies. Affirm, I am well. Affirm, I am well. April 23rd. If you men are to behave like cowards, you should exchange your loincloth for my undergarments. Yah Asantewaa. Queen Yah Asantewaa. Chemicals in the food, water, air, and medications can only augment the homosexualizing process. So we must be careful in how much of our thinking we give to the idea of chemicals as a primary source of homosexualization. Anything which directs our attention away from Urugu as a source of abnormality is made permanent and primary so that we become distracted away from them as a cause. Here, the chemical influence is being used to shift our attention away from genocultural history, i.e. the record of the molding of genes by cultural imperatives, because that alone tells the whole casual story. Too much thought put into chemical sources makes us overlook the fact that it takes a seasoned homosexual culture to direct any biological changes that result from chemical manipulations toward a homosexual end. This end has been custom designed by those
who created the culture in their own image, and Yorugu's image is unquestionably homosexual. There are conscious cultural politics at work. While having an undeniable impact, chemical causes only to serve to distract us from the root of the problem, from its unchanged genetic origins, from Yorugu, the hand which is now chemically rocking African cradles. And that Yorugu's pathological need to remain blameless become the norm, not whether or not chemicals impact homosexualization of African people, is why those alternative explanations, whether real or imagined, have come to dominate the discussion about causes in the homosexualization of African people. Affirm, I am a warrior in every way possible. Affirm, I am a warrior in every way possible, and we must be. April 24th, no revolution has a right to call itself that if it does not have or does not develop a capacity to defend itself. Maurice Bishop of the New Jewel Movement of Grenada, which is ironic because that's what we're talking about today, is the Caribbean and one of its greatest revolutionaries. Let me finish reading this before I go off on that. Walter Rodney, that's what we're talking about today. Historically aware warriors, we cannot limit our analysis and interpretations of the national European military force to active, organized federal army, navy, air force, marines, and coast guard. That would be exceedingly naive, though not equally obvious or glorified. The CIA, the FBI, Secret Service, Blackwater-type organizations, police on the streets, SWAT, National Guard Reserves, Forest Rangers, Border Patrol, personal and or corporate security guards forces, neighborhood watch groups, militias, camps, groups of war reenactments like the Sons of the Confederacy, bodyguards, private detectives, bounty hunters, bouncers, and concealed and unconcealed carriers, to name a few, and to not to speak of their color guardians, all are part of Yorugu's military force. They all protect their collective living and dead interests, and they all act above the law in applying armed violence against those who may pose a threat to the employers or owners they take such great pride in protecting. We must also note that there is no disconnect between the military agencies in any society, country, or territory within the European nation. We cannot realistically distinguish between the CIA, Scotland Yard in Europe, or the Mossad in Israel. They interdependently operate as one against all perceived as a threat to global European imperialism. And because we are warriors aware of the success of Yorugu's invasive practices, we know that their presence is virtually everywhere. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's everywhere. And we must continue to fight it, not to fear it, but to fight it. Affirm, I have the power to defend us and act accordingly against enemy forces. Affirm, I have the power to defend us and act accordingly against enemy forces. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. The Inye Sesim. Once again, the program tomorrow, Brother Sincere, and that program, it's going to be at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, and Black Debonair, an evening of networking, honoring, and the conversation of or elevation of Black men. We have three honorees, this young brother, honoree, Roby, myself, and a younger brother, Brother Isaiah, will be honored. The host is Brother Sincere, and the creator is Sister Lulu. And we look forward to it. It's at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. And that is tomorrow. Doors open at 6:30. And I'm not sure what the cost is. It's not on here, but it's very minimal, brothers and sisters. Come on out and have some networking and conversation tomorrow evening at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Once again, I'm asking you, our listeners, to go to YouTube and check out the documentary, the movie, Great Pyramid K 2019. The movie, Great Pyramid K 2019, the letter K 2019. That's going to be, we're going to have a conversation on that. I'd say within the next week or so, and more than likely, as deep as the information is and as bountiful as it is, will probably be a two-part series because we want to make sure we discuss it well and make sure that we're going to try to get some people who can really lend some good meat to the discussion about what you have seen or what you're going to be hearing about ancient Kemet. So, let me see if my guest is here. Let me see if my guest is here, brother.
I'm here, brother.
All right. That's right. Thank you, brother Akil Parker, brothers and sisters. And Akil has been with us for the last few weeks on Friday. And today we're going to talk about that great revolutionary, Dr. Walter Rodney.
Definitely.
And other revolutionaries because, he was influential as well as all the other ones. I just mentioned in the Inye Sesim, Maurice Bishop. And and I remember what this government did when Ronald Reagan was president to Maurice Bishop and the New Jewel movement in Grenada. You know, the bottom line is just like I just read you the Inye Sesim, it doesn't make any difference. All those entities are security forces, no matter what, a damn block club, or block watch, all of them enforce the idea of what Europeans want to do, and that is to dominate and to control. They all enforce that, you know. And so we have to understand that. And it is European extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. It's a global phenomenon, and but we must battle it if we are to be as a people and to be free. So what's been happening, my brother?
Everything's been good, man. Just, you know, teaching at Cheney and, training some future teachers, some future black educators.
That's great.
And hopefully we need some people that can not only teach in the colonial schools, you know, for now, until we build our network of independent African centered schools, but to be able to offer some independent educational opportunities for our people and our children. Because that's one of the things that I stress in my classes, you know, and I let them know. That's a consistent theme, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really about us educating ourselves in real time and not just lending lip service and rhetoric to it. I mean, rhetoric has its place. You know, like Dr. Bobby Rice said, we don't have enough rhetoric. He actually, and I thought about that when I heard him say that on the lecture in the past. And it sounded strange at first, but then I thought about it. I said, yeah, I actually agree with that. We actually do need more rhetoric, actually, or more rhetoric that's more meaningful.
Right.
That's leading us towards.
Not just rhetoric for rhetoric's sake, but we need rhetoric that, just like they said, the best way to deal with the propaganda that is being perpetrated by Europeans is our propaganda, you know.
Definitely. So, you know, programs like this, you know, there aren't a lot of conversations about Walter Rodney going on, you know, and about a lot of the people that, you know, you talk about on your program and, you know, other people in, you know, African center spaces that they're talking about. There aren't enough of those conversations. And I also think that if we start having more of these conversations, then that's a way to compete because it's really a propaganda war. Like you mentioned, it's a propaganda war. And we're losing the propaganda war horribly. You know, it's like it's asymmetrical warfare right now where you know, we're losing, you know, dying, you know, daily on the battlefield in terms of the propaganda war. Because before a cop shoots anybody, you know, there's the ongoing propaganda 24/7, 365. And that's how it's been for many, many years. I think that, you know, if we increase the propaganda, we can change the mindset and start to decolonize the minds of our people and the outlooks of our people much more. So we got to get better with that and, you know, start talking about some other exemplars from our past and, you know, from the present too. But, you know, the past is really important. You know, people like, you know, the late Walter Rodney and what he represented and what he was working toward and, you know, the community of people that, you know, he was working along with and what their goals were, you know, in terms of Pan-Africanism and trying to create a new society instead of most of the people that were given by the mainstream or Eurostream media that really just want to, for the most part, just find a more comfortable space on the plantation.
Yeah, you know? That's right. That's what they want to do. They find that comfortable corner or niche in Europeans or Yorugu's world. And that's what they want to do. And they feel that, hey, I got mine. You know, it ain't this system that these Caucasians created is not the problem. You know, you're the problem because you don't acquiesce to it and you don't try hard in it. You know, that many people believe that. Many people believe that the problem within society is our fault, that we don't try hard enough. That's the same thing that Trump's brother, son-in-law, Kushner said. If you remember that, he said that, the real problem is that they don't really exert themselves. They don't try hard enough, you know.
Yeah. People allow their egos to get activated and they respond to that. And they, you know, then they try to, you know, they believe it, you know, they buy into it. They even argue with it.
So, right.
But instead of just questioning fundamentally whether that even makes any sense, you know, or whether they have to accept that belief, you know, because they don't have to agree with that. You don't have to agree with everything you hear. You can have a difference of opinion, you know, just because some person from that has a certain status says it, it doesn't mean that it should be taken as the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people do believe, I agree with you, a lot of people do believe that our problem is our blackness, you know, our African heritage, African ancestry, and not the behavior of those towards us because of our African ancestry.
Well, you know, there's a piece, I don't know if you heard this, I'm going to play this right quick, okay? I'm going to play this because I think, you know, there's a piece that that talks about that. And basically, it's coming out of the idea that we're cursed, you know, that we are a cursed people. And I remember hearing Minister Louis Farrakhan talking about that, because if you believe in the Bible and you believe the story of Noah, you know, cursing his son Ham, and for Ham to be servants unto his brother, which was a bedrock for the justification of the enslavement of us as a people and the taking of our land and our properties, our minds, our bodies, you know. Yeah. You know, they want to believe that we are cursed. We are not cursed. You know, but that's something that has been put on us to make us believe that that's what we are. But no, we're not cursed, you know. And let me see if I can find that piece. It's a deep piece, you know. And I've played it at a few other programs, you know, to help us understand that all of these things that are happening to us, and I'm quite sure Walter Rodney was understanding that. And he, at a time in the 60s, and he's going through, he's going through the various islands and understanding the same thing was there. He's seeing the same thing, you know. I'm like, you know, it's a damn shame. It really is. It's a damn shame. Okay, where's that at? I'm having some issues here. I know one thing a brother sent me. He has a picture of an indigenous warrior. He has a picture of an indigenous warrior, a Native American. And it says, I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid to live on my knees in a world run by lesser men, who control the destiny of my children. I was like, I love that. Put that should be on a t-shirt. You know, that should be on a t-shirt. I mean, It's deep that we're confronted with this, you know, all the time. And we're confronted with this. And I'm like, you know, this is crazy. Okay. I'm still having trouble finding that. But when I do.
And find it, we can just jump into the conversation because I wanted to get into some biographical information on Walter Rodney for those that may not be as familiar with him, and then start talking about probably his most popular text compared to the rest of his text, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa.
Right.
You know, Ground Is With My Brother, and some of his quotes and some of his beliefs and ideas, especially the ones on education, colonial education from How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, and his analysis from the 1960s, and you know, and showing how European colonization was made possible and strengthened by education. And
right.
We, you know, I want us to think about the educational system in the United States right now, no matter what city we're living in, and think about the parallels, you know, that, you know, Walter Rodney exposes in How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, and then see that, you know, education is really, or schooling has been used consistently throughout history as a tool to control and, you know, to keep people in check, keep people in line, you know. And I think that once we realize that, we'll start to kind of modify how we agitate for changes in educational systems. And, you know, because we first have to understand that those that create the educational systems and maintain the schools and maintain the educational systems, they have a certain goal. Their goal is not to empower and to, you know, help people realize their full human potential.
Right.
But you need to train people to be able to fit into your economic structure. So, you know, this is all about economics. So it's all mathematical. So there's really not enough room for everybody to fit, you know, and to get a, you know, that's why the notion of equal education and quality education for everybody is really in a colonial system like we live in the United States of America, whether we want to accept it or not, is really just ridiculous. You know, this idea that everybody would have a quality education, you know, that would be the goal of, you know, the Europeans that control these systems and control the government and control the corporations, that they would actually want. Want for everyone to have a quality education, and need for everybody to have a quality education, because you know you don't need people to understand pre-calculus and trigonometry.
Right.
You know, you just need them to, you need people to be unemployed, you know, for you know, in one sense, you know, because when we listen to the news media and we always, you know, we hear about terms thrown around, like, you know, even if we're not well versed in economics, we hear about an unemployment rate, right? But it's always going to be a rate. There always has to be some unemployment in the capitalist system in order to apply pressure and keep wages low. Right. So you need that. You know, you need that surplus of human capital and human labor so as to apply pressure. So if people that do currently have jobs, if they want to start to agitate for higher wages or better working conditions, then that's leverage for the business owners to be able to say, well, listen, I could easily just, you know, you don't like this $10 an hour. You want $20 an hour? I could easily just fire you because there's some unemployed people that would love to take you.
Yep.
You know, this is all part and parcel of the system.
Right.
And, you know, we have to understand it. So when we talk about an educational system that's meant to feed into this type of system, this type of labor system, then things start to make a lot more sense. And again, it brings us to the critical issue of that many of us don't want to deal with, or maybe we just don't consider it or haven't considered it yet, is that we need independent systems.
Yeah.
Like we will never get what we need to be full humans and for everybody to be full humans. I mean, there'll always be tokenism. You know, there'll always be some of us that get certain benefits from this system. I mean, I could say I've gotten many benefits from this system. You know, I have a middle-class background. I went to, you know, magnet schools my whole life. I went to college. You know, but, you know, I'm like, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer, like, you know, nobody's free unless everybody's free.
That's right.
You know,
Ashe.
My individual achievements really mean nothing. Like, unless I'm, you know, I'm trying to use, you know, what I got from these, you know, these white people to try to, you know, work toward, you know, empowering everybody. But it's not enough. You know, we need to really be working toward, you know, creating systems where everybody can eat and everybody can benefit, mm-hmm. and everybody can have quality education. But it's not going to happen within this current, you know, situation, within these current circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's just not. And we got to talk about that. You know, think about what type of society we want. And, you know, speaking of Walter Rodney, when he was spending time in Tanzania, he was spending time in Tanzania while Julius Nyerere was the president, either president or a prime minister. He was the leader. And that was one of the things that Nyerere said, because Nyerere was a teacher. Nyerere originally was a school teacher, and then he became a politician after that. And one of the things Nyerere said is, you know, before we even start talking about educational reform, because they were anti-colonial, they were fighting against the British, because the British had colonized them. But before they were colonized by the British, they were colonized by the Germans, because, you know, Tanzania was previously Tanganyika and Zanzibar, two separate nations, mm-hmm. That had separated through during the scramble for Africa, so to speak, you know, Berlin Conference, 1884 and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, okay, well, we need to create a different educational system for our people. But prior to the educational system, we have to presuppose what type of society we want. You know, what type of society do we want to have? And a lot of the conversations currently that take place in, you know, in the American landscape that talk about things such as education reform or even police reform, they're devoid of a conversation about what type of overall society you want. Because really, it's as if people want to keep the same type of society, the same type of neo-colonial, monopoly capitalistic society, and just tweak it a little bit.
Because that's what they're used to. Because that's what they become. That has become their norm. And also, too, you have to understand, this is what you've been impacted with. This is what you've been trained to accept, you know. And of course, part of the training is instilling fear into you to not challenge it, to not change it, to go along, to get along, to accept it. You know, when you have a society that perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence, and as a consequence, you don't have good family life. You don't have a good complementarity life with a good sister or a sister with a good brother. You don't have that because it's not conducive to that. It is about, what can I do? What can I get? How can I get over? How can I get mine? You know, when the sister look at the brother, oh, does he have a job? What kind of car he got? You know, and the brother looking at the sister strictly sexually, you know. And so it's not conducive to that. You know, there's a saying that conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, who you are historically. And who we are culturally has been challenged and changed because we are ashamed of who we are culturally. You know, you don't embrace an African culture. You know, you agree with Yoruba, you agree with the European. And so as a consequence, it's hard for us to show our people the right way for us to go collectively, you know. And so, you know, it's hard to break that idea of individualism and to be collective, because it's not that way in the society, except for white people are collective. You know, they come together on everybody outside of them, especially on against us.
Yeah, they're clear.
Yes.
In that regard. Yes. I'll say that. I have to respect that, actually. I have to respect that. You know, I have to, you know, respect the principle, you know, of being able to do that. So we mentioned he was from Guyana, right?
Right.
Guyana, from the northern coast of South America.
Yep, the same Guyana where Jim Jones, a few years later, brought some brothers and sisters from the West Coast, particularly in the San Francisco or the Bay Area, to Guyana with the idea of having a so-called paradise through the religion of the Christianity. I believe that Jim Jones was a Christian minister. You know,
that kind of makes sense, considering, like, you know, that Walter Rodney's his departure from the physical realm. He was assassinated in 1980,
right?
By the Guyanese government, you know, mm-hmm. by Forbes Burnham, you know, who was a black man, you know, for
Baron. Right.
That, so again, speaking to the concept of neocolonialism, where, you know, it's kind of, you know, and for those that may not be as familiar with what neocolonialism, you know, think back to one of my favorite quotes from Malcolm X in his last message, last speech he gave a week before his assassination in Detroit, Michigan. He was talking about neocolonialism. He was talking about the independence movements in Africa and how there were a lot of what we call flag independence, a lot of flag independence. And Malcolm said, you know, all goodbyes don't mean I'm gone. So all goodbyes don't mean I'm gone.
That's
so
right.
What happens is the Europeans realize at some point they're going to have to, because of the rise of, you know, hostility in the, you know, in the native people and in the indigenous people, and these, you know, independence movements, at some point they're going to have to remove themselves from the leadership, and they're going to have to install puppet leaders, you know.
Yep.
This happened across the continent of Africa in many places, and this still happens today. And it happened in the Caribbean. And again, when we're devoid of history, when we're devoid of historical context, and we don't understand fundamental concepts like neocolonialism, this is why this leads to us not being able to see similarities, you know, So it's strange to me how, you know, if we see neocolonialism, we study it, we analyze it, we see Black leaders being put in position, then it will make sense for us to have a better understanding of many of, maybe not all, but many of Black mayors, Black governors, Black politicians, even Barack Obama himself, president, you know, in the context of neocolonialism, right? We look at, you know, how they have been instrumental historically. Like we talk about Forbes Burnham, was the president of Guyana. Walter Rodney returned to Guyana to teach, right? But he was revolutionary. So came back to Guyana in 1974 after leaving Tanzania. Left Tanzania. He was teaching in Tanzania from 1968 to 1974. Left Tanzania, wanted to come back to his homeland and teach. Forbes Burnham revokes his ability to teach at the University of Guyana. You know, and then actually, you know, because of Walter Rodney's political involvement, you know, in the nation, you know, basically it was kind of like a war going on between the group that Walter Rodney, the political group Walter Rodney was a part of, and the Guyanese government. You know, at one point, Walter Rodney was arrested and charged with setting fire to him and some other, setting fire to two government offices.
Yeah, it based upon what I read, it was very suspicious, but they wanted to pin it to him. In fact, it seemed like they said that he had explosives and that the bomb that blew up the car he was in, it was his own fault, you know? That it was mishandled and that he not was assassinated, but that he committed suicide. But later, through the investigations, they found that that was not the case. And also to his brother, right? Was his brother with him?
His brother was in the car. Yeah, his brother was in the car with him. They went and got these walkie-talkies, you know, these walkie-talkies. Mm-hmm. And the walkie-talkies were rigged with an explosive device.
It is.
That blew the car up. So that's what happened. So that was June 13th, 1980. And I always, since I started studying Walter Rodney, I've always thought about, you know, that connection, you know, that personal connection, because I was that was a short time after I was born on May 17th, 1980.
Oh,
you know, and then
shortly
after that. So I like to think that, you know, he would be an influence. You know, I look at his career and how, you know, he was, you know, kind of like this militant, you know, this radical revolutionary teacher, radical revolutionary professor, and grounded in the streets. Like he wasn't stuck up in the ivory tower, you know, kind of just lecturing. I mean, he lectured, he did his thing, but he also went out to the streets with the people. As a matter of fact, one of his books is called The Groundings with My Brothers.
Right.
The Groundings with My Brothers is a compilation of a lot of conversations and, you know, ideas that were discussed and you know, that he shared with while he was in Jamaica, because he also spent some time in Jamaica, right? He was teaching in Jamaica, University of the West Indies in Mona, Jamaica. And which is where he actually went to college. He got did his undergraduate work at the University of West Indies in Jamaica. And he got down with the Rastafarians, who were kind of like at that point in time in Jamaica. I don't know how it is now. I don't know I don't know a lot about, you know, Rastafarian history. Very little. But they were seen as kind of like, you know, undesirables. You know,
right.
Undesirable
well,
people.
Yeah, they seem to be the remnant of the Maroons. Mm-hmm. You know, that they were kind of the outcasts, and they were also the ones that worked hard for reparations and for repatriation. You know, the Rastafarians. So yeah.
Another thing interesting about Jamaica is, so when he gets banned from Jamaica, and again, I think this is another thing that's very important in terms of how we as a collective, we as people, we kind of judge who our heroes are, how we choose our heroes. Oftentimes, you know, as a function of colonialism, we tend to choose heroes based upon how they're received by the establishment.
Right.
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 So, you know, we think, oh, well, this singer or this rapper, they got a Grammy, you know, so the establishment has recognized them and has validated them. So therefore, they should be my hero. Right. Because mm-hmm. A lot of times it's not about just the artistic ability. A lot of times it's about how they're regarded by the establishment. Mm-hmm. Right. But then you have people like a Walter Rodney that were a threat to the establishment.
Right.
The same establishment, the establishment in the 1960s and 1970s had the same political ideology that they have now, which is about oppression, neocolonialism. But now many of us tend to just look at people as exemplars and role models just because they're, number one, they're applauded by the establishment and propped up by the establishment, and they're given a platform by the establishment, and they make large amounts of money from the work that they're able to do. But then you have a person like, you know, Walter Rodney he left Jamaica to go to a conference in Montreal, Canada, a Black Writers Conference in 1969. Incidentally, that's also the same year, or maybe it was 1968. That's around the same time that Dr. Clark and some others founded, they split from the African Studies Association and founded the African Heritage Studies Association. That just mm-hmm. made me think, because that also happened in Montreal, Canada as well. But they wouldn't let him back in the country. Right. So that initiated some riots. So they,
right.
They're
these, right. In Jamaica. Yeah.
Riots. People rioted mm-hmm. because of his brother. The Jamaican government wouldn't allow him back in.
Right.
You know, so, you know, and that's a reoccurring theme, you know, throughout history with our revolutionaries and our scholars and our workers. Like Kwame Ture was banned from Trinidad. He couldn't go back mm-hmm. to Trinidad for many years. And interesting story about that is, you know, he was banned by Eric Williams. And Eric Williams was formerly was an anti-colonial.
He's anti-colonial.
Wrote Capitalism mm-hmm. and Slavery, which was a critique of, you know, Europeans and the European slave trade and a thorough analysis of it. And then he goes back to Trinidad. He goes back to Trinidad, becomes a prime minister, and becomes, you know, becomes colonial.
Yeah.
And then he banned his own book. His own book that he wrote critiquing colonialism.
I'm telling you, it makes you do crazy things. You know, when you are affected by this Urugu virus, you know, to me the Urugu virus is even worse than the coronavirus. Any other virus is the deepest virus because it messes your mind, body, and spirit. And, you know, so tremendously, you don't have a clue into who in the hell you are. And how important it is for you to know who you are so you can do the kind of necessary changes that will help our people. And see, here you had Eric Williams, just like you said, and the things that he was about, and then that happened to him, and now he's even banning his own book. And he banned
his own book. His own book. I mean, it makes sense, but then it's just funny to think about it. Like, you know, his own work. Like, you know, he don't want people to read about, you know, how he used to be more revolutionary.
Right.
You know, what he used to Trinidad. So, you know, you have like Kwame Ture was not allowed to come back to Trinidad. We know about, you know, Malcolm X. Malcolm X, mm-hmm. the year before, you know, like 1964, when he was supposed to speak in France.
Right.
Wasn't allowed.
And see, that's when Malcolm knew that it wasn't the Nation of Islam that was doing this to him. He knew that, because he knew the fruit of Islam. He trained him. He helped develop and so forth. He knew their limitations. So he knew that the federal government, that European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege was behind what was happening. And that's what ultimately took him out, even though the Nation of Islam helped create the atmosphere by which that could easily happen. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to take a break. We're going to take a break, brother. And so when we come back, I'm going to, at the break right now, I'm going to play this piece And then I'm going to play a little music interlude, and then we're going to come back and have further conversation. And then, brothers and sisters, by that time, get your questions ready. We're talking today once again with Brother Akil Parker. Our discussion is on the Brother Dr. Walter Rodney, the revolutionary scholar, a revolutionary scholar, truly. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
Important historical facts. Underscore things seriously about THIS underscore. The black African, the wretched of the earth, is the only member of the human race who has been brainwashed to think that his ancestors bequeathed him with a curse that has prevented him from attaining aspired goals and life desires. Almost every misfortune he encounters on earth is the fault of some ancestors, who must be bound and cast with the fire of the Holy Ghost in the name of Jesus. The white people don't have terrible ancestors who have done terrible things. No. It's only the black ancestor. Over the years, the black ancestor has been so vilified by Christians they pay tithes, stay up all night, fast and pray to destroy the African ancestor in the name of Jesus. The black ancestor is so wicked he cursed his own kids. Having cursed his ancestor who gave him life, the black man is roaming around the world like a tortoise without a shell. He has no backbone. Zero identity. Thus no race respects him. He's lynched in Malaysia, incarcerated in Cambodia. He's shot like a dog in the streets of America. In Europe, he cleans the white man's shit. And they spit on him. Why won't they? A man who hates himself and despises his roots deserves no respect whatsoever. John Hawkins was a foremost English slave trader, a thief, and by contemporary moral standards, he can as well be called a terrorist. John Hawkins made 3 trips to West Africa in the 1560s and stole Africans whom he sold to the Spanish in America. On returning to England after the first trip, his profit was so handsome that Queen Elizabeth I became interested in directly participating in his next venture, and she provided for that purpose a ship named Jesus. Hawkins left with Jesus to steal some more Africans, and he returned to England with such dividends that Queen Elizabeth made him a knight. Hawkins chose as his coat of arms the representation of an African in chains. Today the generations of Hawkins and Queen Elizabeth I are alive, and enjoying life from the proceeds of their evil ancestors. They don't demonize their ancestors despite their active involvement in the greatest evil humanity has ever witnessed. Both individuals sanction rape, kidnapping, and mass murder, but their children don't bear ancestral curses like black Africans. You'd be hard-pressed to see a member of the British elite publicly denounce slavery. Isn't it time to emancipate yourself from mental slavery, O ye Negro? If ancestral curse exists, who should suffer from it? The ancestor who kidnapped and raped and murdered and pillaged and stole and enslaved his fellow man, or the man whose freedom was taken from him? Surely, the man who threw pregnant Negro women to sharks at sea because they were too weak deserves his future generations to suffer, and not the man whose society was so pure they had no prisons to punish offenders. Do these black Africans who will go to church today binding and casting ancestral curses know that almost all the top British politicians from the 17th century till the 19th century were proud slave merchants? It is on record that 15 Lord Mayors of London, 25 sheriffs, and 38 aldermen of the City of London were shareholders in the Royal Africa Company, RAC, between 1660 to 1690. The RAC alone was responsible for trafficking over 1.5 million Negroes to Britain and twice that number to the Caribbean. David and Alexander Barclays were active participants in the kidnapping and enslavement of millions of black Africans. As was standard practice at the time, the risky and long-term nature of transatlantic slave trading required new banking houses that could offer credits to prospective slave traders for periods of between 1.5 to 3 years. One bank that provided this service was run by Alexander and David Barclay. Their bank still carries their name. The Barclays Bank is also a proud sponsor of the English Premier League that me and you are fanatical fans of Chelsea and Arsenal and Man United today. Their children don't bind and cast their ancestral evil, rather it is the Negro whose ancestors were dehumanized and tortured and enslaved, that keeps praying against ancestral curses. The Bank of England was also involved in the slave trade. Sir Richard Neves, who was the director of the bank for 48 years, was also the chairman of the Society of West India Merchants. A group of vile men who stole Africans and made handsome profits by selling them onto farmers who needed them to work in their sugar and tobacco plantations in the West Indies. Today, Liverpool Football Club will be playing Tottenham Hotspur in the Barclays Premier League. Pay attention. How many of you who are Liverpool supporters today know that the initial founders of that football club were retired slave traders, whom in 1892, with slavery outlawed, decided to invest their money in a football club that will reap future rewards for their generations to come via a bank called Arthur Haywood & Sons & Company? That bank would be absorbed in turn by the Bank of Liverpool, Martin's Bank, and Barclays Bank. You watch them and shout in ecstasy when they score. But a pastor somewhere will tell you the reason you're poor is because your ancestors committed evil, hence the reason you experience ill luck. And you will believe and start casting and binding rubbish. For your information, Liverpool was a major port for the transatlantic slave trade. Slave ships were often built or repaired in Liverpool. Nearly 1.5 million Africans were forcibly transported across the Atlantic in Liverpool ships. The Liverpool Merchant was the first recorded slave ship to sail from Liverpool. She set sail on October 3, 1699, and arrived in Barbados on September 18, 1700 with a cargo of 220 enslaved Africans. Part owner Sir Thomas Johnson is known as the founder of modern Liverpool. Liverpool City wouldn't be what it is today without the trade in black Africans. The personal and civic wealth gained from slaving cemented the foundations for the Liverpool's future growth. The children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the perpetrators of this monstrosity against the black man enjoy heaven here on earth and live in more stable environment. They have managed to stabilize their society and solve their problem and live in relative peace. But the Negro ancestors, the wretched of the earth, who was kidnapped and his freedom forcefully taken away from him, he was sentenced to a plantation for the rest of his life. It is this ancestor and bed many others who is demonized by Christians as having bequeathed their offsprings with curses. This is a historical fact our African brothers and sisters should be aware of. Africans Unite, Shooting Star.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Introduce myself, my name is Humpty, pronounced with the Humpty. Yo ladies, oh how I like to funk thee. And all the rappers in the top 10, please allow me to bump thee. I'm stepping tall, y'all, and just like Humpty Dumpty, you're gonna fall when the stereos pump me. I like to rhyme, I like my beats funky, I'm spunky. I like my oatmeal lumpy, I'm sick with this, straight gangster Mac. But sometimes I get ridiculous, I'll eat up all your crackers and your licorice. Oh, yo, fat girl, come here, are you ticklish? Yeah, I called you fat, look at me, I'm skinny. It never stopped me from getting busy, I'm a freak. I like the girls with the boom, I once got busy in a bathroom. I'm crazy, allow me to amaze thee. They say I'm ugly, but it just don't faze me. I'm still getting in the c***s, and I even got my own dance.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do it all.
Come on,
I do the Humpty Hump.
Check me out, y'all.
I do the Humpty Hump.
Just watch me
do the Humpty Hump.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm doing? Doing
the Humpty Hump.
Come on.
I do the Humpty Hump. I do the Humpty Hump.
say you're Humpty. You're really funny looking. That's alright, cause I get things cooking. You stare, you glare, you constantly try to compare me, but you can't get near me. I'm giving more C, and on the floor B, all the girls, they adore me. Oh yes, ladies, I'm really being sincere, cause in this, I'm a Humpty nose will tickle you. My nose is big. I'm not ashamed. Big like a pickle. I'm still getting paid. I get by the ladies. You know I'm in charge. Both how I'm living and my nose is large. I get stupid. I shoot an arrow like Cupid. I use a word that don't mean nothing. Like Luke did. I sang on Do What You Like. And if you missed it, I'm the one who said, just grab them in the biscuits. Also told you that I like to bite. Well, yeah, I guess it's obvious. I also like to write. All you had to do was give Humpty a chance. And now I'm gonna do my dance.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do the hump.
Come on, yeah, sexy baby.
Do the hump,
come on, I'll do the hump, to hump, sexy baby. Everybody, come on and do the hump, to hump. Oh, do you know what we're doing? We're doing the hump, to hump, y'all. I'll do the hump, to hump. Watch me do the hump, to hump. Ah, yeah, that's the break, y'all. Look at that bass groove right here. I told y'all a little bit about myself. Let me tell you a little bit about this dance. It's real easy to do. Check it out. First I limped to the side like my legs was broken. Shaking and twitching, kinda like I was smoking. Crazy, whack, funky. People say you look like MC Hammer on crack, Humpty. That's alright, cause my body's in motion. It's supposed to look like a fit or a convulsion. Anyone can play this game. This is my dance, y'all. Humpty Hump's my name. No two people will do it the same. You got it down when you appear to be in pain. Humping, funkin', jumping, dig around, shaking your rump. And when a doodle jump punk points a finger like a stunt, tell him step off. I'm doing the hump.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do the hump.
Everybody!
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to the African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. Digital Underground, Shock G, his alter ego, Humpty Hump. He has made a transition. He has passed. They don't know the particulars of it as of yet, from my understanding. But he was 57 years old. Yep. And collaborated a lot with Tupac. So, to his family and to all those who, like myself, I loved Digital Underground, and particularly Shock G, doing the Humpty Dance. My deepest condolences to his family. Also, too, brothers and sisters, once again, I'm talking about the movie Great Pyramid K 2019, asking and to spread that word. Like I said, in the very near future, we're going to have a program talking about that. Also, too, next month is May. May 25th is African Liberation Month. And we really want to push and promote African Liberation Month. It should be the most important celebration that we have, more so than even Kwanzaa, more so than even Juneteenth. In fact, I've always had some problems with Juneteenth, that we celebrating that the cracker got 2.5 more years of work out of us. Man, you know? Anyway, African Liberation Day, May 25th. Let's push and promote African Liberation Day. Establish programs in your cities, in your places of where you celebrate African Liberation Day. We're talking today with Brother Akil Parker, who is an educator, mathematician. That's why I want him on this piece with the Great Pyramid. He's talking about as a mathematician, you know. But we're talking today about Walter Rodney, the great Guyanese revolutionary and political theorist. Brother Akil.
Yes, sir.
All right. Yeah, man. Humpty Hump. How about that, huh? Man. It only 57 years old.
His connection to Tupac is important because, you know, of course, with Tupac's connection to, you know, his mother, Afeni Shakur, who was a member of the Black Panther Party and a member of the Panther 21.
Mm-hmm.
You know, federal government was coming down hard on members of the Black Panther Party and accusing everybody in the party of, you know, all types of different crimes. And,
right.
You know, when really the crime is really just being African. That's the real crime, you know.
Yeah.
That we have to come to terms with. Because, again, that psychologically, that's one of the things I believe psychologically will force us to move toward independence. You know, a lot oftentimes I'm talking like my children about this, I talk to other people about this kind of idea in the media, especially when, let's say, when somebody is murdered, you know, through police violence, and oftentimes the narrative is you know, they were innocent, you know, they weren't doing anything, and in a sense they may have been innocent, quote unquote, but I think we have to accept that and come to terms with the fact that we are guilty of just being African. Mm-hmm. We're in anti-African space. And what I think that will do for us, if we do accept that, if we're willing to accept that, what that will do for us is that will then motivate us to say, okay, well, what are our options? Because once you accept the fact that you're going to be guilty no matter what you do, right? No matter whether you are, you know, you subscribe to respectability politics and you say, okay, well, I'm gonna pull my pants up, I'm not going to get tattoos, I'm going to speak standard English at all times, and you know, I'm always gonna go to college, I'm gonna get master's degrees and PhDs and everything. But you realize, but then, you know, it's like, but you're still guilty because you're
That's
still
right.
black.
That's right.
Of us realize that, then it's like, okay, well, what's my option? My only option is we have to build something different, something for ourselves. Because no matter what we do, you know, we're gonna be chastised and scrutinized and killed. You know, many mm-hmm. of us. So the thing is, once we start to accept that. But as long as we don't accept that, as long as we kind of maintain the same typical narrative, oh, you know, this was this person was innocent, this person wasn't doing anything, and we're only looking at it kind of on a superficial level and not a deeper political level, we're kind of going to be stuck. At least a lot of us, we're going to be stuck in the same position, you know, and which leads us back to trying to get white people to act better, get white folks to treat us right.
I know.
And it ain't going to happen.
I know. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening. And it ain't going to happen. But yet, we continue to pray, hope, march, whatever it is that we can do to finally somehow make Europeans, make these Caucasians have an epiphany that what they did was wrong and they know it's wrong. And now they will treat and respect our humanity. Damn it, it's not going to happen. That's why, to me, the only solution for African people is sovereignty. The only solution. And the only place that sovereignty can happen is on the continent. The only place that it can happen is on the continent. But what's happening on the continent? What's deeper on the continent today is neocolonialism.
Right.
Is neocolonialism. And neocolonialism has been around for a while. We can look at some of the previous leaders of African countries who ripped them off tremendously. Mobutu Sese Seko is truly one of them in now what is the Republic of the Congo, which was then called Zaire. I mean, man. And there's many others. There's many others, and they're still there today. You know, so, you know, to me, I don't ever see it happening here. I don't ever see it happening with a people who have become, a people who has historically and realistically been an open, sworn enemy to African people. I mean, Malcolm said it best. He said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history of Europeans, and look at their history as it relates to us as African people from ancient times to today. Here these people are the smallest group of human beings on the planet, but yet they control masses amount of wealth and resources on the planet. Because when they came out of that medieval age, that dark age, you know, they would Martel and Charlemagne. That's why I wish that brother wouldn't have named him Charlemagne, you know, damn it. You know, sometimes we got to know who in the hell we are naming ourselves. Like this one kid, his name is Benjamin Franklin. This one, my grandson was playing basketball. He said his name was Benjamin Franklin. Damn. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me because I changed my name, you know. But I did it to protect the innocent. No, I did it because, you know, and I respect my mother. And I, you know, went to my mother and I asked her, I said, I'm going to change my name. And she said, well, knowing you, you're going to do this shit anyway. So go ahead. But I out of respect, you know. But she named me after Edward G. Robinson. She went to a movie. You know, Edward G. Robinson always played gangsters in this movie, but she went to this movie called Edward, My Son, My Son. And she named me Edward Brown. You know, I'm like, okay, you know. But anyway, man, I'm sorry to digress, brother Akil, but man, you know.
It's all related. It's all related. And, you know, when we speak about, you know, again, education, you know, one of the things that Walter Rodney, you know, writes about in the last chapter of how Europe underdeveloped Africa, there's some key quotes that I wanted to
read,
you know, because it speaks to definitely like what we're talking about. One of the quotes is, you know, because a lot of times we have these education conversations where, you know, we often act as if, or it's grounded in this idea that Europeans don't want us to be educated, and in many ways they don't, but in many ways, they do. They definitely do want us to be educated, but they want us to be educated in a certain way, a way that benefits them.
Right.
Benefit the establishment and can benefit the maintenance of the power structure and benefit, mm-hmm. you know, the maintenance of the current economic system, the current political system. So these are the things we have to think about. And so a lot of times, I think we have to look at, like, you know, us receiving scholarships, you know, and not to say that we shouldn't take the scholarships, but we have to be culturally and politically grounded in a certain way before we send our children into these spaces, because otherwise our children will be miseducated, like Woodson wrote about extensively, mm-hmm. To be weaponized against us. Like we gotta be thinking about these things. So one of the things that Rodney writes, he says, and the absurdity is so much the greater when one contemplates how much Africa produced in that period and how much of that went to develop all aspects of European capitalist society, including their educational institutions. Cecil Rhodes could afford to leave a legacy of lavish scholarships to white students to mm-hmm. study at Oxford University, having made a fortune.
Hold on. And that's another thing that really gets me, is the Rhodes Scholarship. In fact, there was a cat in 100 Black Men. His name was Cecil Rhodes. I'm like, God damn it, y'all. You know, but anyway, the Rhodes Scholarship, and you had all these people. And I remember this one brother who played for Florida State who was going for Rhodes Scholarship. He played defensive back, and he played a couple years in the NFL. And now he's a neurosurgeon or something like that. And that's beautiful. And that's great. But we don't understand that getting a Rhodes Scholarship is tantamount to a Jew, a European Jew, getting a scholarship in the name of Adolf Hitler. Would it happen? Hell no. But yet, we are so happy. He has a Rhodes Scholarship. He's a Rhodes Scholar. This is the mindset, just as you just stated, that what the European wants us to have. I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
Yeah, it goes further to say, you know, French, the Portuguese, and the Belgians made it clear that education at any level was designed to civilize the African native. And of course, only a civilized native could hope to gain worthwhile employment and recognition from the colonialists. According to the French, an African, after receiving French education, stood a chance of becoming an assimilé, one who could be assimilated or incorporated into the superior French culture. The Portuguese used the word assimilado, which means exactly the same, and Portuguese colonial law distinguished sharply between a native and an assimilado. The latter was sometimes called a civilizado because of being able to read and write Portuguese. That sort of African was rewarded with certain privileges. One great irony was that in Portugal, up to 1960, nearly half that population was illiterate. And therefore, if they had been put to the same test, they would have been judged uncivilized. There was a governor in Tanganyika in the 1920s, when they were still under the control of the Germans. Governor Cameron stated that, his intention was that the African should cease to think as an African and instead should become a fair-minded Englishman. Students who came out of Livingstonia or Blantyre Mission in Malawi were known as Black Scotsmen because of the effort of Scottish missionaries. And then further down on that same page, and yet it can be said, again, this is very similar to, you know, Winston. So this shows like how globally it wasn't, you know, 1990, yes, on tradition,
yes, of what the European global phenomenon
all over, you know. Yeah. Yet it can be said that among those who had the most education were to be found the most alienated Africans on the continent. Those were the ones who evolved and were assimilated. At each further stage of education, they were battered by and succumbed to the values of the white capitalist system. And after being given salaries, they could then afford to sustain a style of life imported from outside. Access to knives and forks, three-piece soups and pianos then further transformed their mentality. There was a famous West Indian calypsonian who, in satirizing his colonial school days, remarked that had he been a bright student, he would have learned more and turned out to be a fool. Unfortunately, the colonial school system educated far too many fools and clowns, fascinated by the ideas and way of life of the European capitalist class. Some reached a point of total estrangement from African conditions and the African way of life. And like Blaise Diagne of Senegal, they chirped happily that they were and would always be European. So that's why, you know, people, you know, use epithets and pejoratives like Negro-pian,
right.
Afro-Saxon.
You know,
names like that. Yeah. But this is part of, like, you know, Walter Rodney's analysis and how Europe underdeveloped Africa and, you know, how, you know, the effects of colonialism on the continent, and especially speaking directly to, you know, education. And I just want us to think about here in the United States and in your city and in your state, and how, you know, because what happens is we end up, like I said, I'm an example of this, we end up going to the so-called quote-unquote good schools. Mm-hmm. That's what we want for our children. Best for our children. So we go to the good schools, but then in the good schools, there's this cultural imperialism that takes place. And there's this cultural violence that takes place, mm-hmm, where, you know, whether it's in the textbooks, a lot of times it's in the demeanor and a lot of, you know, the opinions and the feelings of the teachers. It's translated and transmitted, you know, to the children directly and indirectly. You can see it in the history of the institutions, you know, from city to city. You know, you're kind of given a certain status within that city because you were able to attend that institution, yeah, right? So it's like, you know, your mom can go to the cookout and kind of brag, you know, oh, my son goes to this school.
He's the only one at that school.
Yeah, you know. So I mean, that's good for your ego. That's cool, right? And you know, they can definitely gain some technical education, some technical skills, develop study habits and study skills, and get exposure to opportunities that they wouldn't necessarily be able to be exposed to if they went to the neighborhood school or, you know, a lesser school that didn't have a certain status. But again, it's not I say that to say it's not all good. It's not all sweet.
So, no.
It's even more dangerous, you know, not to say that the neighborhood school is not going to subject them to cultural violence and cultural imperialism, because it definitely is too. But, you know, in those so-called, what we call the so-called good schools, you know, the magnet schools, the citywide schools, you know, mm-hmm. schools that are the pipeline to the, mm-hmm. To the colleges and where, you know, most people go to college after they graduate. Those, we're being trained, you know, and I say we, because I went to one of these schools too. Went to a middle school like this, and I went to a high school like this. It was part of a pipeline, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another conversation we got to start having. Sure. We got to make it more popular, because there's the school to prison pipeline is a popular concept, but then what's not as popular is the, you know, school to you know, neo-colonialism pipeline.
Mm-hmm. No. And we got to deal with that, because that's
the pipeline. These schools are meant to, you know, train us,
right?
To as I always quote Amos Wilson. I always quote Amos mm-hmm. Wilson. He says, you know, you know, he was talking to a group of an audience, and he was saying that, you know, you're being trained mm-hmm. to be the black face of white power.
Right. We got some callers.
Yeah, we also have to be. We have to be critical in our analysis, because we have to be able to separate between the goals and the objectives. It's another thing Walter Rodney talks about in How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. We have to be able to separate the goals and objectives of those that control the institution from the goals and objectives of our own. We have to have our own goals.
That's it. We have to have them. That's why I advocate a strong African-centered education mm-hmm. at the elementary level.
And it's not to say that you know, we shouldn't, under any circumstances, send our children to these so-called good schools, because, you know, you might, you know, that might be the place where they need to go to be exposed to, you know, AP coursework or, mm-hmm. you know.
Or STEMs. Get into STEMs.
Grade. Yeah. And that's mm-hmm. that's needed. Mm-hmm. However, if they're going to do that, then that increases the responsibility of us as a community and as a family, as right. families, communities, neighborhoods, whoever, and just concerned stakeholders and elders and old heads, OGs or whoever, to say, okay, well, I got to prepare you for this. I can't just send you there.
Right.
If I send you there, you're going to come out of there crazy.
Right.
If I send you there, I got to ground you culturally mm-hmm. and I got to ground you politically.
That's right.
And then also what that means is then it puts the onus on us, because then it's like, oh, I got to be grounded politically and I got to be grounded culturally. So I got to sit down somewhere and read some books. Mm-hmm. I got to start studying, yeah. you know, I got to learn the things.
Right. I got to expose myself and I got to expose my yeah. children to that thinking. We have some callers, 646, good afternoon.
Hey, OC, what's happening, man, and brother Akil?
Peace.
Listen, quick question. You were talking earlier about Juneteenth and the extra 2 months that I'm not going to use the word. I think I took it out of my vocabulary.
That's two and a half more.
That
was 2.5 more years of work. These crackers.
You said how much work? Two and a half or 2 months?
No, 2.5. 2.5 years. 2.5 years.
Now, was that just that state or all over the country?
Right. No, that was just that area. That was in Galveston, Texas. That was in Texas. That was the state of Texas, pretty much, because everybody else had got the information. But, you know, at that time, that could easily happen. And because they didn't have the social network, of course, you know. So they didn't get that information for 2.5 years until I think it was General Granger or somebody like that. He went down in there and he read the proclamation, or he read the Emancipation Proclamation to our brothers and sisters that, you know, everybody's supposed to be that, you know. Yeah.
So the mighty sea was still selling, raping, and doing all of his dastardly deed work for that 2.5 year period of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy. That sea is something special, man. That you must give him some credit for his wickedness, his evilness, and his devilment. You know what I mean? I guess, you know, at some point in time, you know, we're gonna have to really truly identify him for what he is, and that should be on a poster with the word above and below evil.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Just use the word evil.
Yeah.
And then if you really want to add on to it, you could add that D. You mm-hmm. see how synonymous that is? Evil, and then you add the D, devil. That right there should tell you something, you know?
I hear you. Okay.
But listen, as far as Walter Rodney go, I'm not sure what happened to him at the end. Did he die in his homeland, or, you know, what was the end? Because I haven't done a lot of research on the brother.
Go ahead, Akil.
He was assassinated by the Forbes Burnham regime. He returned to Guyana to work with the people, and he was doing a lot of political organizing and lecturing. And at one point, the Forbes Burnham regime, like, he went to pick up these walkie-talkies, and the walkie-talkie was rigged with an explosive in it, and he got back into the car, and it blew up, you know. So he was murdered. He was murdered by Forbes Burnham, who was the president, a neo-colonial president of Guyana. That's how his life ended on June 13th, 1980. And, you know, because in the 80s, you know, because then you have 3 years later, you have Maurice Bishop and, you know, the New Jewel right. movement. Many people along with Maurice Bishop, you know, that was Ronald Reagan. You know, people talk about, mm-hmm. you know, and Ronald Reagan was the first one to say, make America great again. Well, I don't know if he was the first one, but he said it before Donald Trump. So that was a throwback, you know. Ronald Reagan said
I saw Maurice Bishop, and, you know, the funny thing is your mother may have seen him also when he was at Hunter College, because he came, you should ask her, because he came to Hunter College and did a lecture, I think, in either 82 or 83.
I'm going to ask her about that.
Yeah, ask her. She may have, if she was going to the school around that time, she may have went to that lecture. It was a very, very well attended and successful lecture. You know what I mean? That's where, you know, I think a lot of people became aware of who he was in our community. And then, you know, one of our most famous ancestors, you know, spoke about him a great deal, Brother Alambé Brown. So I know if your mother was in the movement and during that time, she knows who Alambé Brown is. So, you know. All right. So that's quite interesting. But it seems I got to do a little more reading on the brother, because it seems like he was in lines of you know, the Stephen Biko's and some of the others.
Oh, yeah, Thomas Sankara. Thomas,
in South Africa. Because, you know, it's just amazing. You know, you don't hear too much about what's going on in South Africa now in regards to the revolutionary spirit of the people. You know, because I'm a component of the South African burning necktie. I think that's what we need in this country at this time, to deal with some of these individuals that are basically, you know, killing us at will. You know, it need to be one or two of them that need the necktie. You know, but the thing also is this. None of these things are going to stop until you have an eye for an eye with these with these pigs, you know what I mean? Until it gets to that point, or a threat of that point, they just gonna continuously kill us at will. And the sick and sad thing is, you got these Negroes who are trying to justify the killing of that baby, you know, that 15-year-old girl. There's no way in God's green earth you justify that, you know what I mean? It just goes to show where our mentality is. How do a people who's supposed to be, as Dr. Baruti says, Baba Baruti says, warriors, ever accept that type of behavior from your oppressor towards our women? I mean, that just goes to show the mental sickness that we suffer from, that brothers like Rodney and all of them have tried to counterbalance and waken their people up. I mean, we're in some real serious times, and I honestly don't think that we realize it. Because anytime you're at the point to where you can even consider that what happened to one of your women is righteous on any level, and it's done in, let's say, 22 seconds, I mean, you're kind of sick. You know what I mean? You're really sick. And when, you know, the thing that's getting me is that nobody's picking up on this, and maybe some people are, but nobody's picking on it on the level to where it should really have been. You know, that police officer never said, drop your weapon, drop your weapon. Check that out.
You know what I mean?
Now, if it was in any other situation and circumstance, people would be harping on that about he didn't say drop your weapon, but because it was one of us, it's cool.
Well, it's the same thing that happened to Tamir Rice in Cleveland. The Caucasian.
Oh, yeah, well.
So he immediately came on the scene, got out the car and shot him, you know. So we have some other callers. Jay, do you want to hang on, dear brother?
Yeah.
All right. 469, good afternoon.
Hello, Brother Oshie.
How you doing? How you been?
I am doing great.
Good.
I heard you speaking about Juneteenth. I lived in Texas for about 20 years. actually about 28 years. I lived in Houston for 8 years and then Dallas for 20. And from East St. Louis, Illinois, originally. But when I got there, I was real critical of Juneteenth. However, over a period of time, I actually got to appreciate it. The reason why it is was because it was a celebration for them being free. And during that time, when they found out about their independence, they dropped what they were doing and went out searching for their kinfolk. Mm-hmm. Now, where the problem comes in is that you forget the cultural context, I'm sorry, the historical context, and you celebrate and you substitute partying as opposed to remembering you need to be doing something to honor your ancestors. Just like MLK's birthday, there was a state rep in Houston by the name of Al Edwards. He was opposed to a lot of these parades where you had little girls out kicking their legs up, showing their drawers. And he was saying that that was disrespectful to Dr. King. And they actually voted him out of office behind that. So in terms of Juneteenth, I think that if we really celebrate, and that's what you all are doing on this program, you're educating people as to the significance of some of these holidays that we celebrate. But we need to change from making it a fun time where you get drunk and you have barbecues, and that's fine and good. But at the end of all of that, we need to understand the history and how these people fought to reach that point. So I just wanted to make that point.
I appreciate that. I thank you for that, my brother. Just all right. Continue to hang on. I want us to celebrate African Liberation Day. I want us as African people, and see, our problem, of course, is a lot of us don't want to be African. We don't want to be, some of us don't even want to call ourselves African American. We just want to be black. We want to be black. You know, some of us don't even want to be black. We really want to be Caucasians. We want to be white. Because we've been so Caucasianized, Urugupians. Brother Akil, go ahead, man.
Yeah, that's part of the, and that's the root and the goal of neo-colonial education program, you know, is to have that end result. Because once you have that end result, then you'll be loyal, you know, you'll be loyal too. Also, there's another part of that chapter 6 from How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. I'm going to read a brief part where he talks about how the, you know, even the French, well, all the different European groups were very very strategic in who they offered education to and why they offered education to them. He goes on to, he writes that another farsighted, that's important. We got to get farsighted in terms of thinking long-term as a people. But he writes, another farsighted aspect of French political policy in the education sphere is the manner in which they forced the sons of chiefs to acquire education.
Mm.
It was a deliberate attempt to capture the loyalty of those persons who had previously held political power in independent Africa, and it was an attempt at continuity with the pre-colonial phase. As the French themselves put it, by educating the sons of traditional rulers, a bond is thus established between the native cadres formed by us and those that the native community recognizes.
Mm-hmm.
So these people, they wasn't playing no games. And again, I want us to, like, you know, hear these words and then, you know, go out and grab your copy of How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, originally published in 1972. And, you know, read through this, but think about it in terms of, like, what is going on now.
Today,
one other thing Walter Brown talked about was the ever-presence of history, So, you know, think about what goes on now. And again, when we start thinking about, you know, these good schools and what happens in the quote-unquote so-called good schools or the parochial schools or the private schools or, you know, because these are all, like, you know, kind of concessions that we make. You know, short of, instead of trying to create our own, instead of, you know, supporting people that are trying to create our own or even moving in that direction, we should all be moving in that direction. And it's taking some of us a little longer than others to start moving in that direction. I think once we reach a critical mass of people moving in that direction, then it'll happen. And also, incidentally, another theory I have is that the only way that the schools that our children inhabit, the current public and charter schools, the only way they'll improve for our children is once we leave them. That's the only way. We should far more pessimistic. We're far too optimistic and our expectations are far too high for the Europeans that control these schools. The only way they're going to improve, they're going to change is once we leave them. But once we leave them, they won't need to change. You know, that's the only incentive. They have no incentive to change and improve. And we shouldn't expect them to. We shouldn't expect them to because they serve their purpose. The education system is not broken. It wasn't broken. Wasn't broken in the coup.
None of these systems are broken. They're all designed to function the way they're functioning. The criminal justice system, the monetary system, the governmental system, all of them function for the benefit of Europeans to help them maintain and sustain the privilege that they have created. None of them are broken, but yet we keep talking about that, you know, and as if there's something that we can do to fundamentally change them. There ain't a damn thing we can do, but except get out of them. You know, and like for me, I mentioned this earlier, Brother Akil, I'm a staunch advocate of educating our children at a young level, at an early level, at a preschool, elementary level. Because if we can infuse them with that knowledge of self, now they could go to whatever school, the suburban school, the so-called, quote, good school, and function properly because he or she, they know who they are and they know why they're there, you know? Mm-hmm. And they can get all the things that are necessary, needed to help develop a society where we as African people can live and love freely in, and that's what we need to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, also, I do want to add, too, because I don't want to make it seem as though, you know, our ancestors, you know, on the continent were just kind of taking this line down, this kind of this co-optation of the educational process. There were many, many African initiatives that were, were antagonistic to the purposes of colonial exploitation. That's another thing that Walter Rodney writes about in this chapter. And I think, you know, when I read that, I kind of paused there for a moment and I think that's an essential question that we have to ask, is that if we recognize that here in the United States, again, no matter what, from city to city, state to state, wherever we are, if we recognize that the school systems, the, you know, public schools, charter schools, that they are neo-colonial, and the purpose of neo-colonialism is to maintain exploitation at the end of the day, at the root of it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maintain our exploitation, maintain our oppression. Even if we end up getting so-called good jobs and we can make money and do all this type of stuff, It's still rooted in our exploitation as a collective. Are our efforts antagonistic to that colonial exploit, to the purposes of that colonial exploitation? I think that has to become a fundamental question. Are our efforts antagonistic? Because if it's not antagonistic, then that means we're going with the flow. Mm-hmm. And if we go with the flow, then we're aiding and abetting in our own exploitation. Mm-hmm. And we first have to recognize what that looks like, what our colonial exploitation looks like. And then we have to think of ways, okay, we have to make a decision. Because some people just want to go with the flow because they feel that that's the path of least resistance.
Exactly. It's easier. It's easy to do that.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Not for everybody. This ain't for everybody, right? And a lot of us, we don't have time to fight with them. You know, you want to do that? Okay, cool. At least we know where you stand. We don't need to argue with you. We don't need to fight with you. Nothing like that. But for those of us that are a little more, that are more serious and are more concerned about embracing our humanity and affirming our humanity, we have to ask that essential question. Are our efforts antagonistic to colonial exploitation? And I think they should be. So I think that's a good barometer or a good measuring stick, you know, by which we can measure our efforts, like in terms of everything we're doing. But a lot of us first have to recognize that, you know, the school systems, the educational systems are grounded in and rooted in, and there's plenty of historical evidence to this, colonial exploitation and the maintenance of systems that are beneficial to, our oppressors, and those that originally enslaved us. You know, nothing really changes, you know, it just changes form. You know, it just changes form and changes, delivery methods change. But yeah, I think that's something we got to think about. Are we being antagonistic to colonial exploitation, or are we supporting our own colonial exploitation? Many of us are supporting it because, you know, it pays good, you know. Mm-hmm. And many of us are supporting it because, you know, we think we're well-meaning. We think we're not. We think we're going against the grain, but we just don't know enough. We haven't done a deep enough analysis to realize that, nah, like you're aiding in our destruction and you're helping to maintain our oppression, you know. So we got to start thinking, we got to start reading, and we got to start, you know, looking more deeply at these ancestors that already have done this analysis and already laid this out and already kind of exposed what's going on. And because our enemies have taken what their ancestors have done and have just projected it into the present, and they're just you know, calling plays from their playbook. Mm-hmm. So we got to do the same thing, because we have a lot of ancestors that were able to counter and attack and be antagonistic to colonialism and to neocolonialism. And we got to start going to the playbook of our ancestors. But that's why we got to pick up these books and start reading, and, you know, form the study groups, and, you know, mm-hmm. Create programming and create more propaganda, like we talked about in the beginning of this episode. Even more propaganda, where we had, like, you know, it shouldn't be a special occasion for us to be talking about Walter Rodney, you know, considering the work that he did. You know, this really should be much more of a regular activity.
Right, a common discussion, yeah. And a common knowledge of who and what he was and what he was about. Yeah. You know.
And that's gotta become our responsibility. So we gotta figure out how to an effective and efficient way to make sure you know, young people, just random, you know, young brother. I live in North Philly. You know, you're in Atlanta. You know, young brothers and sisters in Atlanta, in North Philly, D.C., Chicago, Baltimore, wherever. You know, Walter Rodney is just somebody they just know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that name, and not just him, but people like him.
Right.
You know,
exactly. And that's the problem. No. They don't know. They don't know Walter Rodney, Maurice Bishop, Thomas Sankara. They don't know men and women who stepped outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us to think clearly and to think objectively and to look at the European for who and what he was and to try to help us understand that. Mm-hmm. You know? No, they don't. They don't know.
And as we're talking about it, we got to be careful, though, because we also got to be careful while we do it, because, you know, once they hear, you know, somebody will hear this and then end up talking to somebody at some Hollywood, you know, movie studio or whatever, and they'll make a movie, you know, about somebody, because it's like, oh, well, you wanted your children to know about the person, but then it's like, you know, and, you know, under what circumstances, though? Then it's like, oh, you're going to whitewash them, though. You know, you're going to weaken them. You know, it's like, oh, but you want your children to know who Maurice Bishop was, but you're going to make them look like he was a sucker, though. You know, yeah. So we all have to be careful about that, too. We gotta be able to form our own narratives, and really, all we gotta do is just tell the truth. That's really not an issue.
Exactly. Forming it. That's what we got to do. Tell the truth.
Yeah, we just tell the truth. You know, Hollywood a lot, but, yeah.
We have to reclaim, recapture, and restore. It is our responsibility, the history of our people, to present it to us objectively and seriously. You know, that's why I'm saying that if we put the energy into developing an educational process at an early age, and we do this, you know, I've mentioned this to ASCAC. I'm sorry I missed your presentation, man.
It was recorded.
Okay, yeah, I'll try to check it out because I'm doing this thing with my grandsons, this basketball thing, man. But anyway, you know, we got to start at a very early age, instill that in them, the educational process on an elementary level. You know, there's a movie with called. Man Friday, Richard Roundtree's in it, and Peter O'Toole. It's a takeoff of the Robinson Crusoe story. I believe it was a made-for-television movie, and I saw it one night, and it captivated me when I was just staying up at the firehouse. I was at work, and I was standing watching this movie. Now, there's some segments of, because I have the movie, there's some segments of it that I have some issues with, but the premise of the movie is outstanding. You know, the premise of the movie is outstanding, called Man Friday, that Peter O'Toole washed up on this island. And Richard Roundtree and some of his brothers from his island, you know, through a storm, washed up on the island that Peter O'Toole was on. And this is the setting. I mean, the time frame is the 1800s, maybe middle, early 1800s, captivity of African people are going on. And so he shoots them, and he pretends, and the Richard Roundtree pretends to be captivated. And so, therefore, Peter O'Toole said, I saved you, you know. And so, he learns the dialogue with him and so forth, and basically he becomes his servant, you know. And to make this long story short, because we're already out of time, that Richard Roundtree is basically telling the story to his people about how this man is and who he is and what he is about, because he didn't do no work and Richard Roundtree was working his ass off, but he said, I don't do this, you know. He said, well, okay, I'll give you these coins, you know, because there was, when he shipwrecked, there was some coins at the bottom of where the island was, whatever, and he went and got that money. And he bought everything in the house. And, of course, the gun was there. And he made that man build a boat to sail back to his island. But there's one thing he said, and to make this long story short, I'm going to get to it right now. He said, I can teach the children. And Richard Roundtree went off. No, he cannot teach the children. Not with this mindset that he has. No, he will corrupt them. And so they sent him back to his island. They sent his ass back. And you see them dancing and so forth. But that's our message. That's what we should do as a people. Get this European, Caucasian, extremist, racist, privileged individual out of our lives, out of our existence. And the only way we can do that is we go home. And I know that's going to be difficult because a lot of us, oh man, this is just as much ours as it is there. We fought the Indians too. You know, we helped build this, you know. And we really believe by saying that and hoping and praying that the Caucasian will recognize that and then, of course, allow us to be a part of, you know, I mean, a free part of, not the aforementioned, not the, an appendage of what's happening, to be a free part of this. That's never going to happen. The European's mind is not in that way. History bears that out. Once again, Malcolm, of all our studies, history, look at the history. It constantly, and he'll constantly tell you right now, many of these memorials of George Floyd after this verdict was rendered are being defaced. Mm-hmm. They're being defaced because, you know, the bottom line is for us, there never has been and never will be any real justice for us in a system designed to imprison us, to subjugate us, to humiliate us, to denigrate us. It never will be, but we keep holding out hope. And the real issue is that we don't come together ourselves. We keep begging crackers, but of course we've been trained to beg them. You got any closing remarks, dear brother?
I guess my closing remark would just be a quick couple of sentences from How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, speaking to education, like we were just talking about us educating our own. And, you know, this is something that we can grow on. He says on page 264, of course, it is still expected in Africa that anyone who is already educated and is earning a salary should in turn help to educate at least one more member of his extended family. That is precisely because his extended family and his village community often made sacrifices to allow him to be educated in the first place. That was as true in Mauritania as it was in the reserves of South Africa. And no African would have any difficulty in supplying his own examples to that effect. So when I read this, I was thinking in terms of like, you know, this kind of initiative that I've been thinking a lot about and trying to promote, where we reorient ourselves to the public school system, the charter school system, where the community becomes the primary educator of our children. And when mm-hmm. if we have to send our children into these spaces, then they're only going there for practice.
But right.
The primary education comes from the community.
Exactly.
And, you know, any of us that have our own education, we have to become more aggressive with creating educational opportunities and providing education to other people. Even if you're not formally trained as a teacher, even if you don't have a degree in education, even if you've never taught in a school before, our children, you know, need to learn a lot and learn a lot of things. And a lot of us have a lot of invaluable information and skill sets that we kind of take for granted that, you know, we just need to organize our efforts and organize our, human intellectual capital in order to provide that, you know, to our young people. And it's in our tradition. This is our tradition. Like, you know, somebody educated, then it's like, oh, it's your responsibility. You got to educate somebody else.
That's right.
Because as when we think about collectivism, it's not about, you know, rugged individualism. I got mine. Now you got to get yours. It can't be like that. We'll never survive
unfortunately.
Like that.
But unfortunately, that's what it is, ain't it? But you know what? You brought up a point, and I'm going to got to quickly say this because we got to get out of here. The European Jews in Milwaukee, their community, they send their children to a public school. My daughter went to that school. But because their influence is so deep that they told the school, we're not going to be at this school because this is Yom Kippur or this is Rosh Hashanah or this is Hanukkah. And what they also told the school is that we're just sending them there to get the math, to get the science and other subjects, because we're going to teach them about what it means to be a European Jew. That is our responsibility. So from a historical perspective, you know, in other areas of for them to maintain who they are, we're going to do that. That's our responsibility. We never done that. Our whole situation is we turn it over to you. Give them the history where you have to learn about European history. You know, I'm almost 70 years old. The only people we learned about is Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver. We didn't even learn about Harriet. We learned about nobody who resisted. You didn't learn about Harriet Tubman. You didn't learn about Frederick Douglass. You didn't learn about Nat Turner. Who Shona Hill didn't learn about no damn Nat Turner. Okay? You know, you didn't learn about anybody who fought back. You learned about those who capitulated, those who acquiesced to the situation, you know? So anyway, my brother, Brother Q, did you get a chance to check that documentary out yet?
Not yet. That's on my to-do list.
Okay.
Upcoming.
Because what I want to do is have a program and maybe a two-parter. And I'm really looking forward to having you as one of the integral parts because, number one, you're a mathematician, and number two, you're knowledgeable, you know. So we can definitely talk about it you know, has we can pick a date out that we can do it. Okay?
Okay.
My brother Akil Parker, I once again appreciate you. Thank you so much. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just to M-I-N-D, but to M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Hope to see you on Monday.